All right. Today's lesson is going to be kind of a culmination and transition from the last couple of months. We're not done talking about family stuff, but we're going to start talking about different family stuff. And with the events coming up that we just heard, there's going to be a kind of break in the action. So it didn't make sense to keep going with the same content. So we're going to use that break in the action to shift gears. And somewhere in May, we'll pick up the next thing. It'll be related, but not directly related, if that makes sense. So today's culmination is one I think is very important. Life in the Fast Lane is the title, but concept is all these lessons we have accomplish nothing unless they're implemented. All the marriage seminars you've ever been to accomplish nothing. So what keeps us from implementing them? What causes couples to grow apart over time as opposed to together? What's the decide? If you had to pick one thing, like what prevents us from doing this right in our culture today? Kids.
Distractions.
Mm-hmm. Fatigue. I think you're all three right. Laziness. All these. Now you get, that is the underlying issue in what's been said. So it's not like it's actually kids. It's the time necessary to make this whole kid thing work that then you're not having long, relaxing strolls in the park with your spouse. You're changing diapers. And it's distractions. It's not that we don't have the time. It's that we're doing other things. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on TikTok I haven't seen yet. So I obviously, that was for you. fatigue and, you know, kind of the laziness of like, where am I spending my time? Do I have time and energy to do this still? I think time is the absolute necessity for any kind of intimacy, whether it's romantic couple intimacy or just family togetherness, any kind of meaningful relationship is contingent on the time you put into it. And our culture has undermined that. Intimacy is important. The Lord God said, it's not good for the man to be alone. I'll make a helper suitable for him. Like that relationship is the foundation of human society, is that principle that you're not supposed to be by yourself. And in God intended you to have relationships, specifically intimate relationships with another person. Singleness is not evil by any stretch, but if you're asking like what is God's design, like best case scenario, having it, some kind of meaningful relationship is the goal that you can be invested in. Relational intimacy is a gift from God. It is not a convenient bonus to something else. It is the gift. It's what is supposed to give stability to a lot of the other things in your life. Intimacy comes in a lot of forms. There's emotional intimacy, the ability to connect somebody on an emotional level and share feelings. Sexual intimacy is the one that couples usually want to talk about in our culture, but it's like one of several, and usually is connected, by the way. A failure in one leads to a failure in the other, just for what it's worth, fellas, if no one's told you that yet. Work intimacy, there's a special relationship that grows working together. One of the things that attracted me to come to Central was the possibility that Celine and I would get to work together professionally instead of like she did something somewhere else, that she could actually work with the staff and participate. And it's been really cool to get to argue with my wife in whole new ways. It's been kind of cool to have her around and do work together, because there's an intimacy you get, whether it's a person of the opposite sex or just a friend or whatever, that you get just from doing work together that's close. Commitment intimacy is what you get in like in a marriage where you say, I'm in it forever. That opens up some barriers to intimacy that can only happen in a marriage committed relationship. Intellectual intimacy, when you can spar intellectually with somebody who's, you know, kind of thinking on the same wavelength, that's a special bond. I have a couple of buddies from grad school that we get together and argue theology every so often because it's our favorite thing to do. And it's our poor wives sit there and they're like, you guys are weird. And we,
we've
know, banter.
Gotten close. The wives have gotten
close.
Yeah,
while we were over here arguing about,
we're here doing our thing.
Yeah, that's Nestorian heresy. It's okay. whatever. Aesthetic intimacy, sharing in beauty in the same way, whether it's music or art or whatever. Recreational intimacy, if you guys have the same hobbies with somebody, you share that, right? That creates some intimacy. Creative intimacy, building or making things is a beautiful thing. Crisis intimacy, the intimacy that develops because you went through the same trauma of something bad that happened, and that was the person in the foxhole with you. You get the foxhole reference, military veteran. You share something with that guy that you don't have with anybody else. Crisis. I'm very close with my sister-in-law, Teresa, because she and I were in the waiting room during my brother's brain surgery, right? So 8 hours, and then weeks after that some of the other family went in and out, but I went to Nashville and stayed. And just because we were kind of in it together for 2 weeks, there was a bond that endured. And we don't have a whole lot of other things in common, but we're close now because of that. So there was a crisis, and that person that was in the foxhole with you build. All of these can exist in marriage. At least some of them had better exist in marriage, and also in family. Taking out the sexual one, obviously. The other ones, several of those, you're building with your children. Maybe you like to do hobbies together, or you like to make things together, or you share aesthetic appeal, or you like same music. Something. You find something to do. But in every form of intimacy, the central factor is time. Like, there's no way to have it without having time spent together. It's not something you can phone in. You can't check a box somewhere and just have a relationship. The relationship does not exist where time doesn't exist. It's absolutely essential. So why don't we have more time?
Because it took an hour away from us, daylight savings
They
time.
voted, they fixed it, right? We'll see how that goes. We all, from the physics point of view, we all have the same amount. I can count them, right? This many hours in a day, but it doesn't feel like it. So why don't we have more time to sit and like just enjoy the company of somebody else or whatever? Why don't we have that?
It's because we don't budget our time well.
Okay. Time budgeting.
Modern habitat.
The modern habitat. Say more.
Well, all the women could be in together, doing work together, and spending time together, and having children. They're spending time, and the men could be spending their time together in the field. And, now we're, on our phones. We're going to the job away from our family. Friends, and maybe have more friends, but it's a different thing. We have a whole bunch of buckets where everything is more
Yes,
together.
spot on. Like, the modern shift in economics and culture, it has changed us. It doesn't mean it's all bad, but it has changed us. And if we want to keep some of the things we like from the world that disappeared, we have to fight for those. And that has time budgeting. One of my favorite little quotations from one of my favorite authors recently passed away, Eugene Peterson. Busyness is an illness of the spirit. I love that line if you pause and reflect on it. Universally, if I walk up to somebody at church and I say, "Hey, how's it going?" The answer is, especially if they're a family person, "Busy. We've just been so busy lately." Busy. Like, it is the correct answer to give. Outside of church, inside of church. In fact, you're embarrassed if that's not your answer. Lazy, we haven't done anything right. We sat around yesterday and didn't do a thing. It's kind of like embarrassing that in our culture of just drive and activity and frenetic motion, being busy is the right thing to be. It's understood. You need to have your kids at X number of extracurricular activities. You need to be involved in this many organizations. You need to have this many hobbies. You need to be doing this much at work. You need to have those to be good. In our culture, that's like the definition of success, is being a busy person. Eugene Peterson says, actually means you're sick. Like, you're not meant to be, it's like running a temperature. It tells you something's wrong when you look at your life and say, busy? Busy is not a good thing. And that is a hard switch to change in your own head. But what I'm suggesting today, and what we're going to get into the next couple of units of material, are that we're not going to be able to have meaningful relationships without a system-sized change in the way we do business as a family. It's not a minor tweak you can make. Okay? See the difference of what I'm talking about? Like, if this light is bad, it drives me crazy that these aren't exactly the same light. Okay? I could change out a bulb, and it's moderately better. But if I actually want all the room lights to match and be good, I'm going to have to come in here and replace some stuff. I've got some LEDs down the hall. I need to come in and put them in, and it'll be all nice, and it'll work right. And then they'll be consistent, and they won't flicker and give me a seizure all the time. Okay? There's the minor change that makes things moderately better for a little while, and then there's a system change. Like, this is not working. We've got to do something different. And that's what I'm suggesting the modern family needs, is there is a pretty drastic set of overhauls we've got to make. Until you commit to that, you're going to be very busy, and you're going to tell me all the time how busy you are, and then you're going to say, I just don't know why I don't have good relationship with my wife, husband, kid, parents, neighbor, whatever. Because there was no time carved out in your time budget, in your life for that. For what looks like doing nothing. Relationship building, from a productivity point of view, looks like a waste of time. And I use this picture on purpose back here. Like, these people are building a relationship back here, sitting in these chairs on the beach. It looks like they're wasting time. So if you're making your time budget for the day, what do we do today? It looks like nothing. But that was a thing, right, that mattered. I've learned that a lot in my business of ministry, that it's very easy to just be go, 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 go. But another thing Eugene Peterson said was, every word that ever moved men was written by a man who wasn't moving. That behind great sermons or thoughts or Bible studies is time to sit down and just kind of stare at the sky and think a little bit and reflect. And if you don't build that in, you don't get the results. And that's same is true for relationship. We're going to focus on two specific areas over the next several months that make modern life especially challenging. One is going to be technology, and one is, I don't know what to call it, meritocracy, the idea that if you're not accomplishing something and buying things and doing stuff, then you failed in life. Or maybe consumerism, the idea that by getting things and having stuff, you've succeeded in life. Whichever of those appeals to you most is the right one I need to talk about, probably. But that combination of what does it mean to be successful is a problem. And I want to just introduce them a little bit today. Technology, let's start there. Technology is not moral. It's neither good nor evil. I get a little cranky every time I hear somebody say, all these cell phones today are making us, but it's not, the cell phone isn't making us anything I didn't want to be, right? Turns out I wanted to ignore you, and now I have a convenient way to do that on my phone, okay? And it's the way it is. Sorry, guys. The technology, we got really impressive bombs now. We didn't want to kill anybody. The bombs wouldn't kill anybody on their own, right? Like, we made better bombs because we wanted to kill more people more efficiently. Weapons, computers, whatever it is, like, it's what you want to do with it. So I don't blame the technology. However, much of the applications of modern technology has been specifically engineered to maximize your use of a product. It's designed to alter your behavior. Okay? The technology is neutral, but the guy in a boardroom somewhere who's trying to make some money has an agenda. He's not altruistic. He's not selling you a iPhone because he wants you to have a better life. You need to make money and to accumulate power and influence. If it's free, you are the product. Okay? So think about Facebook just for a minute. What does it cost you to be on Facebook? Zero. Time. $0 and infinite time. So what's the transaction? And think how much money goes into creating and sustaining Facebook as an entity. Why would you do that if there's nothing to gain? Well, there is something to gain. They are giving you Facebook and trading that for your time. And then they sell the ad space or whatever, and that's where they make their money. You are the product. It's not Facebook is being sold to you. Facebook is a tool to sell you to an advertising agency who wants your attention. Facebook can say, we have their attention for this many hours a day. How much is that worth to you? And they're selling you as a commodity to something else. Okay. I love Sudoku puzzles. Fun, right? It's my relaxation because I'm a nerd. I have a little app, and it's ad-based. They have a subscription service, but they've made it so expensive no one in their right mind would pay for the ad-free experience, because it actually makes them more money to show me the ad in between puzzles than for me to just pay them outright to pay my puzzles. I want to just play my puzzles, but instead I have to watch an ad for an app I'm not going to get, except maybe I will. Well, they're selling my attention. So if it's free, you are the product. And there are real consequences. Anybody seen the Social Dilemma movie on Netflix? I know the irony of suggesting you go to Netflix to talk about technology, but you pay for Netflix, so it's okay. Yeah,
you can still be the product.
For sure. For sure. Then you're just a dumb product. But yeah. Yeah. Please sell me. Here, take some money. Yeah. That's what I do. It's a great documentary.
We made Lucas watch it with us.
It has a lot of interviews of people who kind of engineered a lot of the social networks early on and then since have gotten out of the business because of the ethics of it. It talks about some of the mental health options. 30% of 18 to 40-year-olds feel anxious if they haven't checked Facebook in the last 2 hours. Where does anxiety come from? Well, we have systems in place that literally create anxiety. That's what they feed on. It's how they get your attention, by cultivating within you chemical reactions in your brain that will produce anxiety if you're not engaged in their product, of which is actually you. Yeah, again, it's not the technology isn't evil, but it magnifies the bad things we wanted to do anyway and makes it easier. This certainly applies all the way down to kids. We're going to talk a little bit about kids and technology. I'm not a radical about it, to be honest with you. I'm not Amish. I love technology. I love video games. I love devices. My phone is literally trying to do something on my watch right now as I speak. That said, on average, parents say their children spend 5 hours using an electronic device on a typical weekday. And that data is pre-pandemic from Barna. I don't know what has happened since then, but I have to guess. It's gone up.
Well, especially since they're using the technology in schools now.
Yeah.
What do you think about Bibles on your phone?
I like them from a data point of view. From a tactile point of view, you may notice I carry one around. You know, I mean, there's something about having it open to me that's valuable. I don't have a strong opinion, but
I had an app that, because I'm cheap.
Yeah.
It had the Advent.
Yeah.
So I'm reading and it pops up. Stuff that I was looking at earlier.
Yeah.
Or that I wanted
to. Is it selling my book? Because if that's okay. That would
No, that strangely wasn't on there.
Alas.
But it will be soon.
I'm sure.
And then it distracted me again from what I wanted to read and get away from that. And then it distracted me.
Something about using the Bible for ads is a little terrifying to me. So, I mean, I like apps. I have a prayer app that like dings several times a day to say, hey, Ben, remember to say a prayer, and I'll stop and pray. And it's like helped me, and it's a free app. So I'm wondering like who's making money off this? I'm suspicious, but I mean, it could be good. I mean, I think that's why we have to assess everything of like, what are we getting and what are we giving up by using the technology? Do you sleep with your phone next to you? I do. 70% of parents, 72% of preteens, 82% of teens. there are consequences. I'm, you know, I'm not saying that's an evil thing. I do. There are consequences of having that device next to you as you're trying to go to sleep, looking at a bright light before you go to sleep, especially for a teen or preteen who has a test in the morning. Like there are, it is a cultural shift that has implications we have to talk about. I don't have simple solutions, and that's going to make that a difficult conversation for us, but it's something we at least need to be aware of. What does it mean? What's the difference between having this next to me instead of a wind-up clock? What changes in my behavior? Something does, actually. Just be aware of it.
And we've, since Lucas started having a phone, he had his fourth birthday. And there for the longest time, it was bedtime, 9 o'clock, you bring your phone to our room, that's where it's going to charge, that's where it's going to stay, and I'm going to go through. And then, I don't even know what, I think it was probably Christmas break, and just life.
Just got out of the habit.
And we got out of the habit, and so he started keeping it in his room, telling me he was going to bed, and I knew when he woke up in the morning, he was not, he was on that phone. So just this last week, we went back to that, 9 o'clock, bring it to our room, charge it right there on our table in our room. And he already has, is a better kid.
Different in mood, difference in how awake he is in the morning. His grades have improved.
Yeah, in just a week.
It's like,
Yeah.
That was strange.
Nicer.
Yeah, he's literally a nicer kid. Go figure.
Yeah.
So that's something you got to talk about. Could you assist me? So what we're going to start in May, and I'm going to pass these out. We bought some copies of the TechWise family. I think I have enough for one-ish per family. If not, I'll know to order some more. You can also, if you're an ebook person, the irony there is not lost on me. You can get it as an ebook or Audible. If you want to buy your own, you can. You want to buy more copies. So try to spend some time the next couple of weeks, read ahead. What he's got are 10 rules for technology and family. They're arbitrary rules, and I don't subscribe to all of them, okay? But they're all like a starting place for a conversation. So what we're going to do is, what the goal is not for you to take the 10 rules from this book and say, those are now our family rules. But at the goal is for you to create some rules for your family. Like, these are our arbitrary rules that work for us that are something like these rules. This is how we do it. And then you pick. But just be informed about it. The other thing on consumerism, which we'll get to later in the summer as time allows, it's a personal passion of mine. I don't think capitalism is intrinsically evil. I'm not a socialist, as it turns out. That said, capitalism does have some moral implications attached to it. Ralph Glasser, who probably does think capitalism is evil, says one does not sell a product, one sells a dream. The ad agency is not just trying to get you to buy a car. They're trying to get you to believe that if you have this car, you'll be happier. There really is... There are values at stake that they're trying to convince you you're not happy now and you will be when you buy this. A just a little more mentality never arrives at its destination. But that's how capitalism works. I mean, if you stop wanting things, somebody's not making money selling it to you. So desire is built into the system. I think it's still better than the alternatives. Just recognize it's built into the system of you wanting things is really important. General rule, though, contentment cannot be bought. There is never something you will have that will give you the ultimate happiness that it promises. But deep down inside, you actually do believe it. It's satisfied. One of my favorite people is Joshua Becker. We have confused needs with wants and security with luxury. As a result, many of us pursue and collect large stockpiles of possessions in the name of security or happiness. We work long hours to purchase them. We build bigger houses to store them. We spend more energy maintaining them. The burden of accumulating and maintaining slowly becomes the main focus of our lives. Becker is on kind of the forefront of the minimalist movement, of which I have a lot to say, and I'm quite passionate about myself. And I'll try to sell you on it later this summer. But to give you some preview of what do we mean by our possessions have gotten out of control, I have charts. U.S. self-storage construction by year. More mini storages than ever before. That's in billions, by the way. Construction spent in billions, up to $5 billion on places to put things you don't have room for in your house and that you don't need.
I have a friend that owns.
Yeah. Yep. Self storage industry in the United States makes $39.5 billion a year. $39.5 billion industry to sell stuff that you already bought from another industry. Put it somewhere. U.S. has over 1.5 billion square foot of rentable self-storage space. That's 26,000 football stadiums worth of space. And then this is my favorite. This one right here. If you add up every Starbucks, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, Pizza Hut, and Wendy's in the country, there are still more mini storages than all of those combined in the U.S. Okay. Moral of the story, we need less crap. Okay. You are working harder to get that stuff that we then store. Okay. It is apparently not making us happy. So what's the alternative? I'm going to preach some minimalism to you, which is the philosophy.
But different dopamine.
Yeah. We're going to have to dial back our possessions. Like it's a habit. It's an addiction. And we're going to have to go cold turkey on it. We're going to have to, like, break the addiction. I'm completely out of time. That was the second bell. But when we get there, we'll talk about how to make new habits about possessions. We'll tell Selene and I's story where a couple years ago we did go cold turkey. We did something radical. We downsized from kind of the typical American 2,300 square foot American house to a 900 square foot apartment with two kids. And said, we're going to do this because possessions don't matter. And we did that for a couple of years as kind of a cold turkey experience. We're back in a big house again, but we live in it differently because we have like an apartment mindset in our house. And